bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 428 to be broadcast. Bicycle Talk, episode number 428 to be broadcast on Wednesday, January 22nd, 2025, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's in the other room, but she'll join us soon. If you're listening and watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment below. We should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. Or if you're listening to this on an audio file, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. All right, I get around and in and around my community, and I talked to yet another walker last week who was complaining about bicycle trail etiquette. Basic etiquette rule is wheels yield to heels. Got that? Wheels yield to heel. Keep this in mind when you're approaching other trail users. Bicyclists or motorized vehicles yield to all other users, while hikers, walkers yield to horseback riders. And by the way, if you do something wrong on your bike, I seem to be, as the local cycling aficionado, the one to get the verbal abuse. See you people. You know, the you people disease, where people, you know, they come up to you and they realize you're a cyclist. So they go, you know, you people, I was out driving my car the other day and you people. No, it's not me people. All right. It's not me people. We set examples for one another. All right. So if you could just be kind about this and think with your this lovely item that you are so valued with, that you put a very expensive helmet on the top of it, you know, just be smart, please. I ask, just please be smart. So, you know, slow down when you're on a multi-use trail, announce yourself when you're on a multi-use trail, and, you know, let people know that you're there. If you're coming up behind them and you don't announce yourself, you're going to scare the living daylights out of them. That doesn't go over well. Now you become you people. That's how you do it. You want to know how to become you people? I can teach you how to do it. Be rude. Block the road. Don't get over when cars are coming up behind you. Don't talk to drivers while you're riding your bike, even though you don't have to use... You don't have to use anything other than your hands to motion people and communicate with them. And then you'll become you people. All right, that's my rant. I guess my rant was you people. Just so you know, the International Mountain Biking Association encourages the following: accept the rules of the trail etiquette tips. Ride on open trails only. Leave no trace and always yield on the trail. Right. You're the one who's going fast. If you're if you have any questions about this and you're a boat person, this is something I learned when I was a boat person. Motorized boats have to yield to all non-motorized boats. That would be sailboats, canoes, kayaks, etc. Because they can't get out of the way that quick. So it's kind of the same idea as that. So you really need to, like, pay attention to that sort of thing. That way we'll win some kindness awards, which would be really, really nice. Adjusting my sound profiles here. It's a little loud. So anyway, confusion as Portland's road death toll is alarmingly high. Yeah, this is another thing in the rant section here, primarily because there's been a spike in traffic deaths that has tarnished Portland's image as a bike-forward oasis. And this is Portland, Oregon we're talking about. But advocates hope that street safety improvements will accelerate in 2025. So that was kind of an interesting little piece. Slow down if you're in a car, please. Slow down if you're in any kind of motorized vehicle. Even if that motorized vehicle happens to be a bicycle, because you know we have a lot of motorized bicycles out there these days. Just slow down. You'll get there. Really. There will still be there when you get there. Just letting you know. And on a funny rant, I couldn't resist this one. Timothy Chalamet, who is known right now as the actor who is playing Bob Dylan in the movie A Complete Unknown, which I have yet to see, and I am going to probably go, and Fran and I are probably going to go see it this weekend because everyone's just telling me great things about it. So I'm excited to go see it. But he was rolling up to a London premiere of A Complete Unknown on a Lime bike. Yeah, a Lime bike, speaking of those motorized e-bikes. And then he got hit with a parking fine because he didn't park in the right place. And so they gave him a $72 fine. I think that's funny. So anyway, it's a funny rant, like I said, on the funny side of rants. On a positive side, last week I was on and I was ranting about jury duty because I got called to federal court jury duty and I wasn't real excited about it because I got all these things that I'm doing in this new job and, you know, the new job being the registrar of voters in town and I've got this stuff I do for human services in town and then teaching all my classes and teaching all my friends' classes because she's ill until like April. So, you know, I sat down and I set up an email and sent it to them. Never heard a thing back. So, you know, the night before jury duty, you always call in and they tell you whether or not the case is on or the case is canceled. And they left me a very personal note that said, we have reviewed your situation and you are no longer required to be here for jury duty. So anyway, I got out of jury duty, which is why you're listening to me today, which is good because it was going to be at least a 2-week trial. And then I started talking to others about nightmares of being on federal juries for a year or two. Ugh. That's scary. Anyway, I mean, it's not that I don't want to do my civic duty. I'm already doing my civic duty in a lot of different ways, but it's including this show. I think this show is definitely part of civic duty. But anyway, and I wouldn't mind being on a jury if I had the time to do it, but I don't have the time to do it. I really don't. It's like kind of crazy, but I'm very busy. I'm the busiest retired guy out there, as I tell people. Another positive thumbs up here. YouTube. Yeah, I love YouTube. I spend a lot of time on YouTube. I have my own YouTube channel now because of it, and I need to work on that. I apologize for the very delayed episodes that are not on there. I hope to work on that within the next couple of weeks, kind of part of that New Year's resolution thing. Anyway, huge thumbs up to them. I watched number 10 of the UCI Cyclocross World's races yesterday in full. It was in Benidorm, Spain. And I actually made note of this. And I thought Fran would be in here for this because she goes, where is Benidorm? How warm is it there? Those people are like, they look like they're wearing sweatshirts. Well, it's fairly warm. It's kind of on the south of France. It's on the Mediterranean and there are palm trees there. It's kind of cool. But, there's also a bicycle shop here in Connecticut that was named after Benidorm because the owner won a world championship there. So anyway, that's another story for another time, maybe even an entirely other show, but we'll talk about that at another time. So it was a tiny fishing village back in the 1960s. Now it's popular Mediterranean holiday destination known for its nightlife and for cyclocross. Yes, because there was a World Cup cyclocross race there. So I'm down there. Watch. I'm downstairs in my little TV wood stove den, because you can stay nice and warm, and it's winter, and you get to watch good stuff on the TV. And Fran actually eventually joined me and finished watching the race with me. But it was great. It was a great race. Again, yet another great race, and completely free on YouTube. So you can watch all sorts of great cross racing from this year's and the 24-25 Cyclocross Worlds races, all free on YouTube. Very cool. Very cool. So they get a positive side. They get a major thumbs up. You know who else gets a thumbs up? Shout out to Chicago. Yeah, Chicago. Chicago's where my son lives. So shout out to Greg, too, because he lives in Chicago. So, you know, we got to say hi. And when I went to Chicago, I got to see all these bike lanes that they've been putting in. So Chicago is on an upward movement for giving people on bicycles better places and safer places to ride their bikes, which is really good. Last year, in 2024, Chicago issued 3,500 warnings to drivers who blocked bike and bus lanes during a month-long pilot program. A month-long pilot program. Wow. 3,500 warnings in 1 month of people that are parking their cars and trucks on bike lanes. Does that make you think that maybe the lanes should be more of a protected lane and less of an open lane? I think so. So, you know, Chicago, you're on the right path. I know you are. I've seen your protected lanes. They look very nice. It looks like you're on the right path, but it looks like you got a lot more work to do. But anyway, big shout out to them. That's cool. And the day that I am broadcasting this show happens to be Martin Luther King Day. And so I wanted to make a short statement here because Martin Luther King was a proponent for bicycles because he felt that they were good for a lot of people. He just had some positive things to say about it. And I've even posted in the past, I've posted pictures of Martin Luther King on a bicycle, actually riding a bicycle. Down in Birmingham, I believe. So anyway, the statement here is we need human infrastructure to connect our divided communities. We need bike advocates to go to neighborhood groups and to come to a consensus about livability, not as outsiders imposing on longstanding communities from outside, but as engaged leaders in the shift we must make to cleaner future. Inspired by the work of Dr. King and all the people who have heeded his call, we can bring just conditions of social equity to our country, our streets, and our planet. But we have to work together. That's my positive side. That's what I got for you this week. Words to live by. You know, I talk about it in all my shows. I end every show with getting involved and how important it is. And so it's 2025. You know, did you make a resolution? You still can. You know, it doesn't, you know, resolutions don't have to be on January 1st. They can be whenever you make the decision to resolve to change the way you're doing things and do things in a different way, maybe a more positive way. I say go for the positive. I think it's great. You know, I rant a lot, but I also always have a positive side. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip of the Weeks of the Week. Okay, back around the turn of the end of the year, there were top 10 cycling innovations that weren't like others in 2024. And I promised you that I would pull one out from this list because it was kind of a weird list and I thought it would be kind of fun to do. So yeah, we're moving on. So here comes the next one. This is new one-click valve promises to revolutionize bike tire inflation. All right, so kind of an interesting thing. It's called Click Valve. That's C-L-I-C-I-K, not C-K, Valve. Should be in stores as of the third quarter of this year. And basically what it is German manufacturer Schwalbe tires. If anyone's ever ridden on Schwalbe tires, you know they're high quality tires. They've been making high quality tires for a long time. They have revealed what it says will become the industry standard in bicycle tire valve systems, known as Click Valve. The setup is claimed to be much easier to use in existing systems and to boost airflow by up to 50%. So it's interesting. I've looked at it. It looks kind of like a Prestavalve, but not really like a Prestavalve. It's like a cross between a Prestavalve and a Zerk valve. If you know what a Zerk fitting is that you use as a grease gun, that sort of thing, it sort of looks like that, but not really. So I'm not really sure how Schwalbe is going to get the entire industry to go in this direction. It would be a lovely thing if they could, because how many years did I have, and you know this if you have a bike shop, and you know this if you frequent a bike shop, they look at you and they go, what kind of valve do you have? And you as the consumer goes, what do you mean, what kind of valve do I have? It's a bicycle tire. Yeah, but there's different valves involved. So there's Prestavalve, there's Schrader's valves, there's Woods valves, there's a Woods valve. That, now I'm dating myself. But, you know, they're out there. So, you know, people look at you like you're from Mars. So what did each and every one of us do that was in the bicycle business? We took a piece of an inner tube with a Prestavalve on it, and we cut a hole in it right next to it, and we stuck a Schrader valve up and through it, and we glued it onto or tacked it down onto something stationary that wouldn't move very quickly, or something heavy that wouldn't move very quickly right by our cash registers, so you could go Schrader valve, Prestavalve, and you could point to them, and it made it a wonderful visual tool so that people would end up buying the correct tube instead of buying the wrong tube, coming back and going, you know, this doesn't work at all. It doesn't fit my pump. I doesn't fit my bike. Anyway, so Schwalbe says, we're going to fix that. I'm not holding my breath because I can't hold for that long, but I think that this is kind of a cool thing. So it looks really cool. So the entrepreneur John Quintana was inspired to invent the system after watching his children struggle with conventional tire pumps and valves. With existing bike valves, they be Presta, Schrader, or Dunlop. Dunlop being maybe Woods valve. I don't even know what a Dunlop valve is. I'm not 100% sure on that, but it might be what we used to call the Woods valve. Very, very interesting, very strange, and primarily from England. The pump head is typically pushed down onto the stem, then tightened into place by flipping its locking lever. That said, it can sometimes be difficult to tell if the head is properly securely connected to the stem. Additionally, when the head is released from the stem, its lever may hurt the user's fingers as it snaps back out. What's more, a considerable amount of force is often required to knock the head off the stem. This, of course, leads to possibly breaking the stem, breaking the top of the Prestavalve off, which is not a big deal, by the way. Everybody goes, oh my God, I broke it. It's no good anymore. I can't use this tube anymore. Yes, you can. The way a Prestavalve works, there's a small ball that goes up and down inside of the chamber of the valve, and as long as you have air pressure in the tire, in the tube, then it won't leak. But anyway, some people like really crank those things down after they put air on the tires. Bad idea. You're going to break it off eventually if you do that. You don't need to do that. The air pressure will hold the actual air into the tube. Hence, that is why before inflating a Prestavalve, you have to kind of pop the valve a little bit to break the seal so that the pump will work properly. So anyway, This click system is designed to make it a lot easier to do that. The unique pump head connects to a corresponding valve using just a small amount of downward force and produces an audible click as the two components securely engage one another by way of a ball bearing mechanism. This is kind of interesting. Releasing the head is likewise just a matter of gently pulling up and producing another click. I like this. This is kind of cool. So that's what it is. I am going to copy this image. I'm going to just throw it over onto my desktop here, and then I will post it on my Facebook page so you guys can look at it later on, but not at this very moment because we're in the middle of a show right now, so that's not going to work. I do need a charger for my phone, though. Seems like I am running out of gas, and I did not see that coming. So anyway, might be a cord over here, Fran, if you could find it. So anyway, let's go on to the rest of this click valve system. When click valves are... It's a lightning cable. It's one of those guys. But not that. When click-specific pumps and tires are on the way, the system can also be easily retrofitted into existing equipment. I have a solution here. On Schrader stems, an adapter is screwed into place. Here we go. Sorry about that, folks. It is screwed into place and then attached, although it can still be removed when inflating tires at gas station pumps, etc. Users can replace the head of their existing pump with a complete click head or just an adapter. It's also worth noting that regular Presta Dunlop heads can still be utilized with click valves. Users just won't get that satisfying click. So really, really cool stuff. I think it's really cool. So we will see how this works out. And, I think it's going to be, I would love to see it, quite honestly. I think it's a cool little innovation, and it would be a neat thing. So we'll see. Anyway, again, at the end of the show, I will put it onto the site, and you can actually watch a YouTube video on the Schwalbe click valve. Schwalbe is spelled S-C-H-W-A-L-B-E, and click is C-L-I-K valve. So check it out. Watch it on YouTube. Very, very cool thing. So anyway, that was one of those top 10 items that you probably did not see when you were looking for the top 10 best things to have for 2024. And, we'll see if this thing emerges. I hope they said something about the third quarter. So that's going to be a little while until that happens. But hopefully it will be sooner than later, because I think it's cool. And it's definitely something I want to try out because it looks really, really cool. So that's it. That's my mechanical minute, which is always longer than a minute because that's the way we roll here. Anyway, we're going to move on to our content. So someone said to me the other day, I was in conversation with so many people I'm in conversation with because they know I'm a bike guy. So they were asking, so what's with the green lanes? What's with these green lanes I start seeing in cities now? And you know, it's like it's a bike lane, but it's bright green. What is that all about? So fortunately, the folks down in Myrtle Beach and through Streets blog, they have an answer for that. So here's not it. Hang on here. So I've got a little link here, which will put us over there. We'll just bring it up right now because it was a great explanation. It really had a a good little piece as far as explaining why they put the green lanes down. And it was the South Carolina DOT painted bike lanes in bright green in downtown Myrtle Beach. And here's why, of course. So first of all, you know, you can see them. They really stand out next to blacktop, which is black. So the green is very bright. If you spend time near downtown Myrtle Beach, you'll notice that Mr. Joe White Avenue has a bit more color lately, as the bike lanes on the busy road have been painted in an unmistakable shade of lime green. The paint job is intended to indicate which direction bike riders should travel and increase bike lane visibility to make roads safer for bikers and drivers. I hate it when they call us bikers. Stop that. We are cyclists. We are not bikers. Bikers have big engines and they turn the throttle and they make a lot of noise. We don't do that. We're very quiet. We're very peaceful. Anyway, not that people on motorcycles aren't peaceful, but, you know, we're not bikers. We're just not bikers. That's a way. If you want to get under Ron's skin, you call him a biker instead of a cyclist. And I'm probably going to
also say, appreciate you.
I'm going to, yeah. Please don't say I appreciate you.
But I do appreciate you.
You can appreciate me all you want. I just find that statement to be, it's just unnerving.
It's one of those things people say.
It's one of those things people say. And I like the fact that I'm appreciated, but to say that you appreciate, I don't know, there's something weird about it. It just rubbed me the wrong way. So if you say, hey, you're a biker and I appreciate you, you're gonna run into some discussion. That's all I'm saying. So we're going back to the green lanes, though. Let's go back to the green lanes. So this is a safety project, which is data-driven in Myrtle Beach, and they decided to put the feature highlighting striped sections along intersections and some solid blocks of green showing directional arrows. The green bike lanes are used to highlight areas where drivers might merge across or turn into a bike lane. Why green? Well, that bright hue is an eye-catching choice, and green wasn't the first pick for this kind of safety project. In the mid-1990s, the Federal Highway Administration supported experiments with blue and green paint in several cities across the country. It was determined that there were operational concerns with the blue treatment, as it would conflict with pavement markings commonly reserved for accessibility parking, and the blue color was less visible in low light conditions. A bright green color painted along the avenue is only used for bike lanes. There's no official timeline as when they're going to finish this project, but apparently they've started this project to move forward. And should the color of the green, because of because of the hue or whatever, is supposed to last for 3 to 5 years, which is really incredible. And my charger is not charging. That's not good. Says it is. Anyway, let's move on to the next thing here before we run out of power. Not good. Next thing on my list is the bicycle industry. Yeah. Why 2026 could be a turning point. So this is something that got from Bicycle Retail and Industry News, and then it went over to another place, and so we got all sorts of stuff going on here. So why 2026 could be a turning point. The bicycle industry has experienced a turbulent journey over the past few years. According to a recent study by investment specialists, the industry is now poised for recovery with potential resurgence in mergers and acquisitions as early as 2026. As you know, just to give you some feedback on this, the bicycle industry suffered a major hit at COVID, and then, of course, on that major hit at COVID, they ran out of product, and then after they ran out of product, they went to redevelop more product. And apparently, this is a thing that a lot of companies or industries had suffered from. But what happened was the supply became less, and then the supply became great. And when the supply became great, the industry then flooded with product. The bike dealers, because they were so desperate to have product on their floors after not having it on their floors for almost 2 years, bought heavily. The suppliers bought heavily. And, you know, some of the bike dealers bought conservatively, and they're not in such bad shape right now because the suppliers are full. And so they have no problem getting product. But anyway, this really turned into chaos as far as supply and demand went, and as far as inventory control goes, which is always difficult when you're running a small business. Trust me, I did it for a long time. And so, you know, you're always worrying about the next day and the day after that, not to mention the month after that, not to mention the year after that. It's just kind of one of those things you deal with when you're a small business person. So, and most of the people that are in the bicycle industry are small business people. They're not, we're not a huge, massive, industrious type of industry. There's no question about that. So, this is really what happened. We just ran into a supply-demand thing, and the investment activity skyrocketed during the pandemic because of that. So a lot of people started buying into bike companies and expecting to make lots of money because everyone was riding a bike. Even mass transit wasn't happening because people didn't want to get onto a bus or a subway or a train with other people because they were afraid they were going to catch this horrible disease. So that's why everybody went, you know where the money is? It's in bikes, because people need them to get around, and people did use them to get around. And great things happened in places like Paris and New York and San Francisco, and all of a sudden, roads that were normally filled with cars and trucks were now filled with bicycles and scooters and all sorts of personal mobility, which was really, really, really great. So it was a major, major bonus for sure for the bicycle industry. And then, of course, the supply increased, and then all of a sudden, everyone was back to their old ways, and they could get back onto their mass transportation, so they could get back on the buses, and they could get back on the trains, and they could do all the things that they were doing from before, and they parked the bike. So you see what happens here. Big downturn. So this is a it was a downhill battle. How low can you go? How fast can you get there? And as you know, when you're on a bicycle and you got that gravity in your side, that's a good thing. But if you're in the business, it's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. So that is where it all went. So now it is, we're going in, we're in 2025 right now, we're heading for 2026, and as we see peaks and valleys in the bicycle industry, and a Connecticut retailer who I had known for many, many years told me that his business, he had been in business for a really long time, his father was in the business before him, and I said, what do you know that no one else knows because you've been doing this for so long? And he said, peaks and valleys. And I said, what about that? And he said, 7 years. It's a 7-year cycle. You climb up and then you go back down. So he said, you watch everything. If you got a really low point that happened in let's say the year 2000, you're going to have another real low point in 2007. He said, I've been watching it for years. It's pretty predictable, and the peaks and valleys are peaks and valleys, and that's what it is. Now, he was pretty close to accurate. I will say I took that advice because when I was first calling on dealers as a sales representative, I still owned my bike shop. So I figured, well, you know, the guy's been in business for a long time. He probably knows. And he's pretty close. But sometimes it's 8, sometimes it's 6. You know, it can range. But the 7 years gives you a general idea of what happens in the bicycle industry. Now, if you take a look at this, when did COVID hit, Fran? 2020? Was that when the big hit was? 2019, yes. 2020?
2020. Well, yeah.
Really, 2019 was the big. So there was a huge surge for the bicycle industry right then. They couldn't get stuff fast enough. They couldn't get anyone to make product fast enough because everyone was shut down because of COVID. And so there was a huge peak right there. So let's call that the top of the curve. And that's 2020, and now it's 2025. So about 2026, we're going to see the bottom, although I think we're going to see it earlier. I think it's going to be in 2025, and then it will start climbing back up in 2026. So don't take my information as good advice, please. I am not here to give you professional investment information. I'm just telling you what I've seen. That's all. So it makes sense that we would have peaks and valleys. And the thing is, you know, it's not always because of something that's normal. Obviously, COVID was not normal. So, you know, that made some major changes. And boy, I've seen an awful lot of bike shop closings that have happened since COVID and restaurant closings and other things. And it just, you know, it really hit people hard. But we're climbing back out. So if I were a younger and wiser man, I would probably be looking at starting something in 2025, 2026. Actually, I'd probably start it right now just because it would be less expensive to start something now than it would be as things start to curve back up again. Just words of wisdom from an old guy who spent 44 years in the bicycle industry. That's all I got. So that's what this article basically says, that it's looking that it says the market value in Europe and North America could grow at an annual rate of 8%. So that's a big number. That's a really big number. If you're growing by 8%, you're doing fairly well. 10% is outrageously good, and 8% is not bad. Not bad at all. So anyway, I think we've been through the turbulent years. We probably have been there long enough, and now it's time to start moving forward. So that's it. That's what I got for that little piece of information. Let's see what else I had in here, which is good. So I talked a little bit about, we're going to kick this out. I talked a little bit about mentioning, I think it was last week, I had mentioned the leaving of the current administration versus the incoming new administration. And one of the things I brought up was Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg has a few things to say about what is going to be going on in the future. And this was on his way out. He had some statements that he wanted to, and someone interviewed him on it. And it's just kind of interesting. And I think we need to pay attention to this because there's good stuff here. He put in place, he and the Biden administration put together an amazing, amazing transportation infrastructure program. Lots of money went back into the country, which is, you know, it's what the populists want. I mean, it's really it as much as, you know, one particular political party does things all wrong and one of them does things all right, and neither is in agreement with one another, putting money back into the country as did Germany about 25 or 30 years ago, does have a good turning point. It does make a difference. And so, anyway, this was the beginning of it. And we have so much to fix in this country. This country is just, it is a car-centric country that is causing a lot of its own problems in so, so many ways. So anyway, our outgoing transportation secretary has a few words to say about what's going on. And Pete says the outlook for electric vehicles looks shaky. Sales are up for most companies not named Tesla, but with Donald Trump's promise to eliminate all of the generous subsidies and tax credits put in place by the Biden administration, that momentum could falter. I, by the way, personal prediction, once again, don't buy stock on it. I don't think it can happen because with the new administration coming in and his attachment to a giant like Tesla and all of the business that's done over in China, I don't think he's going to get things done quite the way he thought he was going to get things done. But he likes to talk, so therefore. So there is another problem, too, and that is that, and Pete mentioned this, that the new administration is expected to relax tailpipe emission rules that could slow down EV sales even more and allow car companies to sell more polluting vehicles. Not so good for us as cyclists because we have to breathe that junk, and that's coming out of the back of a car. And we're not real super psyched about that. The only positive thing I thought of about electric vehicles, and I own one, is that, at least they're not killing me with their tailpipe when they pass me on the road. But, of course, that is if I could hear them coming. Another story, another time. Totally different subject. But anyway, there is an issue with that. That is why I am, and I will always be, and I will talk about this all the time, a huge advocate for radar on your bicycle, because it sure helps that you can see the car from way, way back behind you before they get to you. And with the emergence of quieter and quieter vehicles, being i.e. either hybrid and or electric, I think it's a useful tool, very, very useful tool. It's great. It's the best thing I've put on my bike in years, and I've talked about that a lot. So anyway, Pete's trying to put on a brave face. While the incoming team sharpens its knives, the transportation secretary is finishing out his days by approving as much spending as he can from the administration's two landmark laws, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law and the Climate-Focused Inflation Reduction Act, before the new administration can claw the rest back. He's also holding on to the hope that the Republican lawmakers, especially those who have directly benefited from the administration's spending on EVs and clean energy, will resist the new administration's efforts to undo his predecessor's accomplishments. For every conservative legislator publicly threatening to reverse the work, there's two or three who look like they're trying to take credit for it, he said in an exit interview with an online magazine called The Verge. And as long as that ratio keeps up, I think the bulk of the work will endure. Another interesting point. And if you know this already, then very good for paying attention. But I mentioned this to Fran the other day. And I said, who is the number one state in the country for alternative energy? We're talking wind, solar. Number one state. I'm going to give you 10 seconds to think about that, and then I'm going to have a spoiler alert, and I'm going to give you the answer.
Isn't that California?
It is not California.
No kidding.
It is not California. It's not Oregon. It's not New York. Those are three giveaways right there. You would think that it would be, one of those gigantic states that has something. How about New Jersey? It's not New Jersey. All right, you ready? Hang on tight, folks.
Can you give us a hint?
I can give you a hint. Everything's big there.
Then it would be Texas.
Absolutely.
That's weird.
Texas, who is a leader in the energy industry, is also a leader in alternative energy.
They have a lot of sunlight and a lot of open space where they have a lot of wind.
Right. And I'm sure this is coming through as an echo chamber because you're so far away from my mic. But if you could, that'd be great if you get closer. But that is exactly right. Fran said that they have a lot of sun and they have a lot of space of which to build solar panel farms and wind farms.
Yes.
And so that will definitely add to that. But isn't that interesting? I thought it was interesting. So when you take a state that is that large, who is constantly battling with the federal government about whether they want to be connected to the United States or not, and that's just history, folks, they have a lot of power, so to speak. That was a unintended pun, but they have a lot of power in so many different ways. So, you know, it's not as gloomy as you think. For those of you who believe that things are going to get very gloomy, I am not a believer of that. I am very bipartisan about this. I have to be because I am in a political position right now where I need to be, but I don't have as much concern as other people might have, because it's just going to be really, really, really hard to enforce a lot of the things that are making the United States a lot of money right now, and people that have billionaires that have large businesses here in this country. I think that there are things that are said before elections which are used as tools to get one elected. I think those things were used brilliantly by one particular party and not so good by another political party. And hence, we have what is happening at this time. So that's just my feeling. I do believe that this will, because of the amount of preparation that Pete did while in office, I think we're going to feel a lot of really positive development over the next 2 years. That puts us into the midterm. That changes the game. There's going to be different things that are going to be presented. And it's all really good for bicycles. Really good for bicycles. Because this infrastructure money that has come in is building protected bike lanes. It's building more general lanes across the country. Maybe that connection from the east to the west will finally happen. That would be so cool. It's 60% done right now, folks. A lot of people don't realize that, but yeah, you could ride your bicycle across the country and 60% of it could be on a trail or a possible protected trail of some sort. So yeah, it's out there. I'm going to study that a little bit more this year and see exactly where those changes need to be implemented and changed, because this would be a really, really cool thing. Could you imagine? I rode my bicycle across the country in 1975. My source of information was a Rand McNally Road Atlas, which I very carefully rolled up in my sleeping bag every day when I got back on my bike to protect it in case it rained, because I had a sleeve to put it in that was waterproof. And that was our source of how do we go from here to there. Not a good idea. By the way, not a good idea at all. But I didn't know. I was 20 years old. I had no idea. And this was our source of information. I had not been really out of southern New England for much of my life before I hopped on my bicycle and decided to discover all the other states along the way. And while it was a very, very, very rewarding experience and literally changed my life and set me in the direction of where you see me today, We didn't do it quite right. But, you know, you live, you learn, you're young. And, you know, ignorance is curable, and I learned a lot. So there we go. Part of the cure. All good. So Pete says, the climate doesn't care whether people care about it or not. It's just going to keep on changing, and we need to keep adapting and doing what we can to prevent it from being worse than it is already. Obviously, it matters when you have an administration that cares about it versus one that doesn't. And Pete says his major experience as a mayor was that if cities representing the bulk of global GDP got together and said, we're not going to wait for on our national capitals, we're going to take actions ourselves. That's how the C40, which became the climate mayors, was born. So he has a lot of confidence that state and local work will continue and that there are new stakeholders, including red states, working class auto manufacturing families, who will be perhaps a surprisingly strong backstop on the continued importance of the growth of the industry in this country. So this is a question was posed to him about, have you heard specifically from any of these red state lawmakers in the so-called battery belt, where these factories are going up, places like Tennessee and Kentucky? Have they told you anything that gives you confidence that maybe there's going to be a more pushback on the elimination of these policies? And Pete says, often it's more in what they don't say than what they do say. The conspicuous decision of the leaders in places like Georgia and Indiana not to try to pile on the anti-EV ideology, because of course governors like cutting ribbons on good paying building trades and manufacturing jobs. And that's exactly what's happening with the battery business. So again, there's a lot of factors here. I'm sure that if I see more that I feel like I need to carry over to this, I will. I have to move on in the show here today because I got a couple of points that really need to be talked about, including some great bike racing stuff, which is going on in the cyclocross world, and also a mention, and I'm just going to do it as a mention at this point because we're going to run out of time here. But the Tour Down Under is happening in Australia, and it's an Australian six-stage event centered in Adelaide, and it winds its way across South Australian roads in the height of Southern Hemisphere summer, delivering usually sweltering opener to a new World Tour season. The race, which was first held in 1999, has been part of the World Tour since 2008, starts in Prospect on January 21st and concludes in Adelaide on January 26th of 2025. The race is often a place where Australian riders rise to the top, putting their best foot forward as they return from Europe to race on home soil. But the strong international field delivered it to a World Tour status, and there is no guarantee they'll have it all their way. Previous winners include Simon Gerrans, who has won the title on four occasions, 2012, 14, 6, and 16, tied for twice, winning the overall title is Richie Porte in 2017 and 2020, Stuart O'Grady in 99 and 2001, Daryl Impey in 2018 and 19, and Andre Greipel in 2010 and 28. Since its inception in 1999, the race was canceled for two editions due to COVID-19 in 21 and 20. And stage one is 150.7 kilometers, and it's already over at this point because we are on the 20th here as I'm talking to you. Second stage was 128 kilometers, stage three, 147 kilometers, stage four, 157 kilometers. And 5 is 145 kilometers. And stage 6, the final stage, is 90 kilometers. So it's a world-class race. It's grown up. There's a lot of interesting teams there. All teams that you would see in the Tour de France or in the Giro. And they send over whatever they're trying to develop, basically, is what I can see in on that. So that's a good thing, and it's the Tour Down Under. In the meanwhile, we still have Cyclocross Worlds, and Femme Van Appel from Visma Lisa Bike took victory in the 9th round of the Cyclocross World Cup in Benidorm, prevailing in the sprint at the end of a thrilling race, which for the most part saw a group of about a dozen riders fighting for the win. The 22-year-old beat Lucinda Brand and to the line as the pair accelerated away from at the end of the 6th and final lap in Spain. 2 seconds further, Marie Schreiber rounded out the podium just ahead of Van Empel's Avisa teammate, Marianne Vos. So anyway, that was really cool. It's her third win there. Very cool. Thibaut Nice, this is the one that Fran and I watched yesterday, scored a solo win in the 9th round of the Cyclocross World Cup in Benidorm, converting a final lap acceleration in his 5th victory of the 2024-25 season.
T-Nice. He's a hip-hop star.
Yeah, T-Nice. It was the last lap of 8, which proved to be the most decisive of the race, with the majority of the hour-long contest seeing a large group of favorites battling for the front. Nice. And Eli Isbert moved clear midway through the lap, and Nyes launched and left his countrymen behind. Yeah, they're from Belgium. surprise, surprise. He would eventually lead the chase, but and salvage second place with 3 seconds down, while the podium was rounded out by Lars van der Haar and ahead of Wout van Aert, who was 4th, and I watched him go from 13th to 4th. It was a great race. Again, free on YouTube. Way cool stuff. Keep in touch with that. We got the events calendar coming up, and I can give you a little bit of an idea what's going on. Currently going on, January 17th through the 26th, it's the Tour Down Under. January 26th and February 9th, we've got Fatty Cross from our friends out there at Airline Cycles in Haddam Neck. And so we got 2 different races going on there. Yeah, it's cyclocross. Yeah, it's fat tire racing. Yeah, maybe we'll get some snow. We tried to get some snow yesterday. It didn't work. The Frozen 4 training series starts March 2nd and goes all the way through the 24th every weekend. It's a road race training series, which is very cool. The UCI World Cross Championships, January 31st through February 2nd. The National Bike Summit is coming up on March 11th through the 13th in Washington, D.C. The Taipei Bike Show, March 26th through the 29th. Finishing points. It's 2025. Hey, are you going to ride more miles? Are you going to ride and commute to work or around town? Are you going for better fitness, or are you simply enjoying the bike rides you're taking more by slowing down and smelling the roses? I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, the dangerous roads, the price of gas, the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and say, you know, hey, take on that pedal and run challenge. I'm going to park my car one day a week, and I'm going to ride my bike instead. You just might surprise yourself. So, anyway, the views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, or you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on YouTube. If you would like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send an email to me. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!